Welcome to Tamar Talks, where music is constant and discovery is endless. Now your host, ready to tell it all, Ashley Tamar!
Hey you guys, what's up? It's your girl Ashley Tamar, aka Tamar Davis with Tamar Talks Podcast. It has been such a long time. We're already in August and I'm just now giving you guys a podcast for the year. I've been traveling, but that is no excuse, right? No excuses for the incompetent, right? I'm not incompetent, but I feel like I'm making excuses. But anyways, it's your girl, Ashley Tamar. I'm so excited to bring this podcast your way. I don't know if you guys have been following my journey this year. I've been following you guys. You guys have been sending some great messages my way and prayers and encouragement, and it's all back to you. You know, I love you guys. I live for your messages and your responses on my polls and all that stuff. A lot is going on in our country. Like, it's just, it feels like an understatement to say, keep our country in prayer. It's like, gosh, like you could just pray, and it's just so much going on. I am praying that you guys are well. I ask that you keep sending in messages and things you want to talk about. 2020, Lord willing, I'm planning something really, 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 really big that I really want to meet all of you guys at and see you guys at. I wish I could hint at it a little bit. I just got back from Australia and Canada, and if you've never been to Australia, please do yourself a favor and go. From the cafes to the parks to, I mean, the water, the restaurants. Oh my goodness, I just could have eaten at every single place. I'm gonna post my top 15 places in Australia. Bird's Basement was an absolute blast. The turnout just superseded any expectation I could ever have, because that was my first show without my mentor, Prince, God rest his amazing soul. And so I am back and about to go back on tour with A Night with Janis Joplin in the fall. So if you're in DC, Philly, St. Louis, the list goes on and on, Cincinnati, I will be posting those dates as well. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. And this episode is pretty special because I've known this man since I was in college, did demo work with him and the whole nine. Shep Crawford, he's coming your way with a great interview for those who just want to hear about. Everyone's journey is so different, and that's what makes it so cool in this thing we call life. So make sure that even though God has blessed you with another day, make sure you're living, make sure you're enjoying, make sure you're encouraging someone, make sure you're giving to someone and sowing into someone's life. And don't look for anything in return from the person that you're giving to, you know what I mean? Know that once you give it, whatever that it is, it will come back to you, good ground, shaken together and running over. I'm your girl, Ashley Tamar. I'm so excited for this podcast. But I did want to make an announcement about some things that's going on in the music business. I've been posting some vlogs. I don't know if you've been seeing them. I do have a new book out called 100 Things to Know as an Independent Music Artist, and it's for anyone in the performing arts world. It has been blowing my mind. It's slowly getting traction, but I am very optimistic and staying prayerful that it will catch on. I did create a 28-page workbook. The workbook is really intensive. It has clauses, templates, sample resumes, whatever. I don't want to give it away because I don't want people to go and, you know, copy it. You know how people can be like, oh, that's a good idea. So it's the things that I've learned over the trajectory of my amazing career. It's not been easy. Let me say that. I just can't give up now. And this is part of that non-giving up process. One of my goals, if you are attached to any school districts, any high school districts, or any arts departments that may be in need of it, please, you guys, there's a way to just cash at me at Siren Music Group, and that's S-Y-R-E-N, as in Nick, Music Group. I just got the Cash App, so I know I'm so slow, so late. But if you do have it in your heart, I am about to do a whole campaign where I launch and adopt schools so that the arts departments can get the books, you know what I mean? And it's very easy. I wrote the book just kind of thinking of you sitting on the toilet bowl. I know that's a little TMI, but I used to love those kind of books when I would visit people's houses and they had these cool little books and jokes and all that stuff. And so I wrote it that easy. It's 100 things to know. It counts down from 100 all the way down to number one. Some of the pages just have one word. So there's that. So anyways, it's your girl, Ashley Tamar, aka Tamar Davis. And one of the things I want you guys to know about the copyright, some things are happening in the music business, and so that's coming up shortly, so stick around. I'm your girl, Ashley Tamar, and this is Tamar Talks Radio.
This is the Tamar Podcast.
Hey, you guys, it's your girl Ashley Tamar with Tamar Talks Radio. I am back and giving you some information on the entertainment industry, some things that are coming across my plate, and of course, you know, I'm always paying it forward. The U.S. Copyright Office has finally chosen a mechanical licensing division, people that are specializing in collecting the mechanical license. And if you've been following my vlogs, you will see, or if you have the book, you will know what a mechanical license is. And I won't get more into that. But what's so cool about this is that it's an entity of people from the business executives. I don't want to go through their names. I wish there were more people that look like me on there, but hey. This is Tamar Talk, so I can say whatever the heck I want to say, right? But they are called the Mechanical Licensing Collective, and it's a new entity created by the statute and slated to begin operations January 1st, 2021. That sucks. It's a long time, but it's kind of cool that we're making strides because as an artist, I am advocating for the arts, Capitol Hill, you name it, been a part of the Grammys chapter, and it takes a lot because a lot of people don't understand the lingo and how much the music business, what it really is. And the fact that how much regulations have not been taking place and how many things have just been a free for all. And you hear it all the time, artists are really kind of on the low totem pole. And so this is really kind of cool because they're going to manage a blanket mechanical license and help collect royalty payments from digital services and in turn pay the royalties to the correct copyright owners. And so in order to ensure that that really occurs finally, this mechanical licensing collective committee or team of people will build a database matching compositions to recorded masters. And that's a big deal because you got to remember when music was first like really starting to generate income in the 40s and the 50s, we didn't have any technological advances at the time to track the music being recorded. And a lot of artists, I hate to say it, you know, they didn't get that opportunity to negotiate the agreements, and that really sucks because they were taken advantage of. And some of the songs that we hear today, some of the timeless classics, you'll be surprised at how many of the writers and the publishers are not getting their share. And another thing that I want to interject, I don't know if you're a Netflix person. I only have it just because we have a family package, and I love the documentaries that they're putting out there. And if you have not seen The Lion's Share, which is a documentary based off of the African who wrote the genre. His name is Mbube. The genre became Mbube. And long story short, he's the guy who wrote Owimawe. So we in America and across the world know the song as Owimawe, 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 in the jungle, the lion sleeps tonight. That song. Well, he wrote that song, and it is such a heartfelt documentary about how he didn't know anything about publishing, about his rights. He is long gone, but his daughters are alive, and he is not receiving the royalties that he should be getting. And so that's why I do this podcast. If anyone were to ask, why do I do the vlogs? Why do I do the podcast? I am just all about just speaking and telling the truth. And it's not okay to just put the water under the bridge and just let it like, oh, you learn for yourself. If the least I can do is to help you build a strong foundation in this scary business, which is very rewarding, but it is a scary one. And so I go back to this whole article that this collective is finally coming out. And it's pretty cool. It's a lengthy article. It came out on Billboard. So I'm excited to see what will happen with that. I'm actually trying to like see how I can get on some of these boards and collective boards. So y'all keep me in prayer with that. You know, your girl is trying to get on up there, trying to get a seat at the table. But anyways, I'm your girl, Ashley Tamar with Tamar Talks Radio. Up next, we have an amazing interview with Shep Crawford. He has written some of the biggest hits of all time. He is the pastor who did speak at Nipsey Hussle's funeral, God rest his soul, at the Staples Center. He is a dear big brother of mine. He now has a place of worship in Los Angeles, in East Los Angeles. I think it's East Los Angeles, called ECM Ministries. And he is my dear friend, Shep Crawford. If you guys did listen to my little EP for Christmas last year, one of those songs, One More Christmas Night, I demoed for, I think, Whitney Houston, and she didn't take the song, and so he let me have it. And so Shep Crawford has written some of the biggest hits, and he's on the cutting edge of more stuff, but he's a musician at heart. He's a man of God, and I hope you guys enjoy this amazing interview with Shep Crawford. All right, you guys, welcome to Tamar Talks Podcast. We are back in effect, and I don't think I could be more excited to have this special guy. I don't know if I should say Pastor Shep now or if I should just say Shep Crawford, but please welcome to Tamar Talks, Pastor Shep Crawford.
What up? What's going on with you? What's going on with you?
I'm so excited to interview you because I feel like you are the composer of composers, and not just because
Thank
of who you.
You
work with, but you really have a musical ear like crazy. So that's really what I wanted to do, was to get out to the young people who you are and what you really do and tell your story. But you were born in L.A., so you kind of have that upper hand kind of sort of being in Hollywood. Do you feel like L.A. gave you that extra boost of confidence to pursue composition? And can you even read sheet music, or is it literally like a gift from God that you just hear and you just compose like crazy?
Yeah, I can read chord charts. That's about it. It is a gift from God. It's something that I or my parents picked up on when I was younger, and so I was trained to play by ear, and it was a gift of God, you know. But in the church for so long doing it, but always had to, since I was a teenager, wanted to do it in a professional manner. And being here in Hollywood kind of made things easier, of course, and, you know, being around it. But I think the drive, sometimes L.A. can make you lazy, and that's why so many people who don't live in L.A. will fly to L.A. with no place to stay and move to L.A. My wife moved to L.A. with no particular gig or anything of that sort, just because she wanted to, you know, get into the music business. So that drive, sometimes people in L.A. can get really lazy because they're here already. But I always had that out-of-town drive for trying to get into the business, and God blessed me to do so.
So that is interesting to say, like, when people are there, they can get a little lazy. I've never heard that one, so that's a good pointer to make, that you still had that hustle. And I noticed that you said, I mean, I read that it was at Carver Missionary Baptist Church where you learned musicianship,
yes,
from Pastor Richard Stubbs, which I think is even more interesting to put a name to the mentor. I think they were talking about at Aretha's funeral, she was one of the only artists that they had heard who brought up names that no one else had heard of, and it was because she always wanted to give face to the name of people who influenced her. What about Pastor Richard Stubbs helped you with your musicianship?
You know, the pastor of the church at the time, his sister was the musician, but she was moving to Sacramento. So it was a couple of us kids out there either play a little bit or wanted to play. At this time, I was 8 years old. So I was playing a little bit. So when he found out about it, he took a few of us, myself, my godbrother, who you know as Montel Jordan, and his daughter, Rhoda Stubbs. And on the summer, he would pick us up. We would go in at 9, and we would stay in there from 9 to 5. Of course, we had our lunch breaks. And he would train us to play by ear. So he had the old school tape recorders that had the red button for record. And he would play a song, and we would try to pick the song up. Or he would get on the piano and play a certain chord, and we would have to find that chord. So he taught us to play what we hear. And we became the church musician, making $25 a week. So that started us. His full band was full of nothing but young people. And we played for the full service for all the choirs. And we grew up together there. I would hold him partially responsible for my music career, because he trained us and kept us, you know, in the church, you know, learning to perfect our craft.
So would you say that that is true musicianship, when someone takes you under their wing and at the same time the person who's learning, the mentee, is desiring to learn and desiring to grow?
Yes, I think so. I think, you know, him being a gospel preacher, you know, played Al Green for us and different things of this sort to kind of widen what could easily be considered a fit in gospel music. And of course, you know, the Hawkins family, James Cleveland, like, we learned so much. You know, he kept us there. He literally did it himself. He would come pick us up. When he blew the horn 3 times, that means come out your house. And I use that honk today for my kids, but we would go to the church and, you know, we would do our thing, and then we would be ready for rehearsal that night, whatever choir. And so I do think I wouldn't trade that for the world. I think when I was a kid, I thought that I was kind of losing out on my childhood while we were in the church, spending summers there. Everybody else was outside, jump rope and hopscotch and riding bikes and different things of that sort or whatever. But, you know, later on in life, you understand that you were destined and purposed, and that your life had to be different.
So do you feel like, did you write your first song while like jamming out, you know, in the church? Or like when was the first time you wrote your first original song? Or when did you know maybe even during that time that you were creating your own, you know, original music?
Yeah, when I was a teenager, I started, you know, trying to write my own thing, you know, write my own songs. I would get all of our tape recorders together because I didn't, of course, the portable four tracks wasn't out by then. So I would get my tape recorder, my brother's tape recorder, my sister's tape recorder, and I would record the music, the piano, rather on one. We had an organ, so the organ on one thing, and then tape that to another with me singing, and then tape that to another would be harmonizing with it. So I was trying to do this. I'm 13 now, you know, and I'm trying to, you know, write these songs and play it for my friends and different things of this sort. But so the writing thing started there, but it really didn't get developed until later on down in life where I've learned the craft of writing, you know, as well, too. And that really started happening when I really started getting into the music business professionally.
So I guess that segues into, like, when was the first time you secured your first placement, your first song placement? Like, I'm sure you had some uphills and some down, you know, situations, but when was the first time it really was just like, oh, my gosh, you know, this is really where I'm going to be?
Yeah, I got into the business, you know, under the umbrella of Montel Jordan, who I started off as his music director, and of course, we grew up in church together, God brothers, if you will, and, you know, got into the business. He brought me in his wing, so I was, you know, his keyboard player and even his keyboard player in the studio. Then we started kind of co-producing, and then he kind of, you know, let me do my own thing. And so then I wrote a song called We Can't Be Friends, which eventually came out on Deborah Cox and RL, but I wrote it for a group called 98 Degrees, and they were at Motown at the time. And the song was accepted, even though they didn't end up doing it. So I remember that being very excited that I finally got what would be considered, you know, my first placement with a song that I wrote and produced. I think from there it just really pumped me up to start creating more and trying to stay in the lane that I see that people, what they want from me. That was the storytelling, the ballads, trying to say things that have been said a certain way, but said a way that it has never been said or hasn't been thought of. I started doing that, telling the story, giving the love songs, giving the drama, and it just kind of took off from there.
That's interesting. So I don't think I had this on your the questions that I sent you, but you said something interesting. You wrote the song for another group, and then it ended up being on, of course, that's one of my favorite songs, We Can't Be Friends, with Deborah Cox.
Thank you.
But can you tell people a little bit about how it's sometimes you can't be too married to the idea of the song being with someone, and sometimes it just changes and alters the course for something better at times? Like, what did that feel like for you?
Well, yes, all of my number ones, particularly, and a few of my top ten, every number one song that I've had went on an artist that I didn't write it for.
Interesting.
And yes, but you know, so you try to figure out why does that happen. But let's take Nobody's Supposed to Be Here, for instance. I wrote it for Patti LaBelle. And the next time you listen to it, you'll hear that it could have been a song for Patti LaBelle. This lovely black butterfly, spread her wings. You know, I spent all my life. You hear Patti all over. I had the girl who demoed it, demo it, you know, with Patti, you know what I'm saying, on it or whatever. And she didn't take it. But I knew that it was a great record. I really felt like it was a great record. So it took 3 years for that record to finally get placed and come out. And it came out on Deborah. Now, you know, someone would ask, you know, are you happy that it came out on Deborah? Of course. Because really, on Patti LaBelle, you know, she was already the ultimate singer and already a legend. With Deborah, I felt like I helped in making her, you know what I'm saying, an A artist and ultimate. So I felt like I held some responsibility for that, which I wouldn't have with Patti. You know, we don't look on the back of the records and find out who wrote for Patti, because she's Patti, you know, and we credit her for it. But, you know, with Deborah Cox, who just coming off of the Sentimental single, which is gold, and to give her a platinum single, you know, I think people are saying, who is that? Now, I think that Nobody's Supposed to Be Here wouldn't have been as big had I not had Patti in mind. I gave it dynamics that Patty would use. The breaks and the church feel came from that. And so I felt like God had me to have Patty in mind, and what I thought was a finish line was a marker. It ended up going on DEPA. Same thing, We Can't Be Friends, I just told you, and it started off in 98 Degrees, and, you know, and ended up going on DEPA Cox and RL, where 98 Degrees was supposed to do it as a duet with another group called Shades of Brown. Or Incomplete by Cisco was a song written for Sam Salter. God has a way of just kind of having you think things are going to go one way, and you just got to trust them that when they go another. We have a picture of being successful instead of allowing God sometimes to just go ahead and paint his picture of what that success is.
That is so interesting. I think I'm sitting up here like, I didn't know all of that. I think it's even more interesting because it parallels to the next question about being a Grammy Award winner and having that title. And you said something very profound, which is, you know, like you had it in mind for one artist and it ended up being for somebody else. But at the same time, if it would have came out, like if Patty is so, her sound is so defined that people don't really look at who wrote her music. But social media has also changed that too. I know Spotify and YouTube, they're now accrediting writers and composers. Like you have to even, you have to have that on the profile now, which is like so overdue. So, and that's hats off to you to even see that from that perspective. Like, you were able to get your name out there because it ended up being with another artist that you didn't even have in mind. So, how does that feel when, do you feel, because the Grammys don't even announce you guys' categories on TV, which to me, when I visited and I was there with the telecast before, I thought in that room, like, this is where everybody is the most important, you know, because the engineers and the, you know, the writers and the composers and the orchestra and all that stuff, that's what makes the song just as much, if not more, to me. So how does it feel? Do you feel that the Grammy Award winner title has changed? Do you think that it has been watered down? You know, because you wrote some timeless songs. You know what I mean?
Thank you.
Timeless
Thank you.
Songs.
I think it has changed, as the music business has. You know, I think that you know, the Grammys are pretty much trying to keep up, you know, what's going on out there. And so it being a business, you know, they're going to do some things that are very different. I remember, you know, when it comes down to only announcing pretty much commercial music and different things of this sort, whereas, you know, before the Grammys was everything, you know what I mean? Every genre, you know, got that TV time and different things of that sort or whatever. But at the end of the day, you know, it's kind of gone into a different thing. And, you know, I can't even bash them for doing that. Maybe, you know, with the economy being how it is right now and social media and everything, maybe they felt like they needed to do something a little different. But I think the, you know, me receiving, you know, my Grammy certificate or whatever from any song or album, that I think the joy of it is, for me, as a little boy, I've always wanted to win a Grammy. And so it's kind of a self-confidence booster, I think, and one of those, I made it. You know, I accomplished it. Even to be nominated was a great feeling. I don't particularly necessarily care if people know or not, or so if it's announced on TV, you know what I mean? But I do feel bad for maybe artists and different things of that sort who do. As a person that's kind of been behind the scenes, I like to be able to walk into a restaurant and nobody knows, you know what I'm saying, or I am, or I'm at the gas station and somebody pull up playing Stranger in My House and I'm pumping gas next to them and they have no idea that I wrote the song. I like that, you know what I mean? I like that simple life kind of thing, without, and still being, you know, still having the success, you know, and the finance that came with it, but still kind of being hidden, if you will. So it doesn't bother me as much, but I kind of feel sorry for the Layla Hathaways and the different people who are out there who should be acknowledged on that first, on the live broadcast, and not just the pre-stuff that's not televised. But, yeah, it has changed. I think we just have to adjust to what it is now.
And that it kind of segues into the next question. Do you feel that there's, you know, what advice could you give to artists, because it's so much out there? I know I see tons of sites that pop up and say, sign up for this because this is the, you know, the new breaking. Like, where do you see artists should really focus their efforts on, especially those who are really called into the music game, because like you said, it's drastically changed on both sides.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know, it's difficult. You know, I would getting into the music business is harder than it was even when I was getting in it. And you would think social media makes it easier, but it actually makes it harder. Because the music business has changed, whereas record companies would sign talent and make that talent popular. Now record companies are signing talent that are popular, that is popular already. So record company, you know, and American Idol, I think, is kind of one of the shows that kind of helped with that, you know what I mean, to change that whole thing, whereas they want to sign TV stars and reality stars and different things of that sort, people who are already popular, and just put a record out on them as opposed to working hard to make someone popular. So therefore, it makes it harder for aspiring artists who rely on the fact that they have great material, they can sing, they can dance, they can do all of their things, but the record company, the business, says, who is following you? You know, who knows you? And back in the day, we used to say, that's your job. That's your job. You know, your job is to make me popular. Your job is to take, you know, that's why you're going to gain so much money off of signing me, you know, because your job is to make me popular. But they don't necessarily do that anymore. Like, just think about it. Are there any artists out there that they're really breaking, or, you know, that artist was already, you know, popular or had a following before time? So it's kind of crazy out there. What I would tell aspiring artists today is to try to make sure your music, your presentation is very unique, because you can go on Spotify and hear everybody's joining. You hear some creative stuff on there, but it's got to be something very different. You got to take chances. It's got to be something that nobody is doing, have done, or have done in a long time. And celebrate your uniqueness, live in your uniqueness, find out what that presentation is, be creative on the videos, be creative, find out how can I make an impact, how can my song, video, outlet that I use stand out among the people. I think you have to fight as hard as you can to make sure that, you know, you get noticed, because it seems easy, but it's really not, because so many people do what you do, and everyone has the outlet now to show the world. And so you have to do something bigger to say, hey, look at me, and not the other millions of people who are doing the same thing I'm doing.
Wow. Pastor Chef Crawford on Tamar Talk Podcast. We're about to let you go.
Hey.
That was, dang, okay. That left me a little speechless right there. What artists are you listening to? With all that said, are you on social media that much where you're listening to newer artists, or what makes them likable to your ears today?
To tell you the truth, you know, I listen to the radio, particularly when my kids get in, so I know all of the, you know, the current joints, you know, when the kids get in. I want to find out what they're listening to. They know it anyway. I listen to adult contemporary R&B. I think right now I'm really on Daniel Caesar. I'm really on her. I'm really on Kylie. I'm on the more music-driven type of artist, and not necessarily just beat-driven. I make my playlist, and I go to Apple Music sometime to find out, you know, what's new, what's getting ready to come out. And, of course, Janelle Monáe, I believe her name is. Of course, I like, you know, what she's doing right now. And a couple of artists more in that genre is what I easily listen to. But then, you know, me, I'll roll and listen to talk radio. You know what I mean? And different things of that sort as well, too. Because sometimes listening to commercial music, everything sounds exactly the same. And
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, they call it, you know, women bees and talking about money and what they got. And so sometimes I just got to turn the radio off and go back to my old school stuff.
Well, thank you so much. Is there anything else you want us to know? I know you did some more stuff on Tamia's new stuff, which I'm always just loving. Anything else you have coming up and...
Yes, I'm working on something. I can't necessarily say what it is now, but you'll know it, hear it in 2019. But I'm semi-retired, you know, and I'm pastoring now, of course, and so that is my main focus. So any projects and anything that I'm putting out is going towards helping the kingdom, and not necessarily meaning, you know, gospel music. You know, I'm still doing what I'm doing, but more message-driven. Of course, pastoring at the Experience Christian Ministries, a.k.a. ECM, in South Central Los Angeles. You can go to theecm.org to check us out, or follow me on Facebook, Shep Crawford, and Instagram and everything. I'm on Shep Crawford on all of them. But, yeah, I mean, we're just expecting God to do some big things. I'm working on some things that are very different. You'll be one of the first, you know what I'm saying, to talk. We'll talk about it when heels of it coming out.
Yes, must. Thank you so much for being on here. It really, really means a lot. And I'm sure the listeners are going to be very encouraged by it altogether.
No doubt, man. You know I love you, and I always got your back.
You are. You gotta be someone else.
It's the early morning, the smell of coffee and the laughter near. I feel so ready for what the day brings when the sky is clear. 'Cause it's a good day today, make today a good day. It's a good day today, have a good day today. It's gonna be a new day. Yeah. I'll make the time for you, for you.
So let's dance.
looks so good to me. What's that in your hand? I said, fruit from the apple tree. Would you like to take a bite and make our way upstream? Before we left the garden, came a sight so tempting, saying, who are you and where did you come from? I want to get to know you. Have anything you wanna have, what you please. Don't say I didn't want you. A price you pay forever. Don't eat from this apple tree. Said, boom, boom, boom.
I believe that God wants the best for us. When I say us, I ain't just talking about the U.S. I'm talking about the whole world, all faiths and religions. But unfortunately, some folks got their own agendas. But you know what? You know what? That's why the people always messing it up. Yeah, yeah. Of Chicago all the way to the Middle East. And I also believe Black Lives Matter and all lives matter. But whatever, cause you know what? You know what? Some people always messing it up. Some people always messing it up. Yeah. Hold it up.